Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm Dr. Lisa. How you guys doing? Oh man, the world is a mess, isn't it? We need some, you know what? We need some positivity and some distraction, and I can't solve all the world's problems, but I do try to solve individuals' problems one person at a time, which is all I can do. We're all doing the best we can, right, guys? And you know what? You, listener, are personally doing the best you can because you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere. That's the only that I'm familiar with, all those shows in the Western Hemisphere. So that's all I have to compare it to. And this is easily the best. I have this great guest on today, David Mills. He's been on before. He's a comedian. He's a really awesome, interesting guy. So hang out. Why I tell you about how great Radio Free Brooklyn is. And also, I need to tell you something else, all right? All right, you guys? So anyway, you might not know this, but I opened an art gallery at a comedy club. Can you believe that? Like a real, like, standalone art gallery inside a comedy space. It's called the Brooklyn Comedy Collective, and it's at their headquarters, which is 137 Montrose Avenue in Bushwick. That's the Montrose stop, you idiots. And tomorrow night, you can just go and see the art, which is by Jen Catron and Paul Outlaw. And it's really an amazing installation. It's called Meat Sweats, and it's made out of porcelain. It looks like meat, and it's really hilarious. It's just like, I can't even explain it, but it's a really, they're really incredible. You know, you don't know how lucky you are to have the opportunity to see this. These guys are really big deal. They have big installations at the Brooklyn Museum. And they did the show, that's so fabulous, just for the space I opened, okay? So the Doghouse Gallery at the Doghouse at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective, and it's open to the public one night tomorrow from 5:30 to 9. So you should go there and see it. It's open other times. You can go in there and see it when the place is open, but that's the official night of the week it's open. And I'm having another opening that's coming up in a few weeks. So I forgot to plug. I forgot I should be plugging that. But also, it's really important to plug Radio Free Brooklyn because we do a lot of really great shit for society. And, you know, We need you to, you know, go and visit us at radiofreebrooklyn.org, donate a little money, check out all the shows. We have so many good shows, 24-hour programming. You know what I'm saying. Let me get to David Mills because we have limited time. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about David Mills. David Mills is somebody that I saw in London almost a year ago, and I was just blown away by him. This friend of mine, Dallas Athent, shout out, took me. She knows I love comedy, and she took me to this hole-in-the-wall comedy club, and I was just totally blown away by the performer. It was funny. It was smart. It was disciplined. It was in a hellhole. I was like, wow. So when the guy was coming to New York, I invited him on the show, and he came to New York in last February 23, and I had him on my show in March, right when he started here, and he had a couple of nights scheduled at a place called Pangea, which I'm promoting right now because he's still there. This is what I want to tell you. So Pangea is 178 Second Avenue. He's got a couple of shows left. Friday's at 9:30, and he's got Friday tomorrow, November 3rd, and then Saturday, November 18th. But anyway, he's a really smart performer and just hilariously funny, and he can sing too. And so anyway, I had him on the show when he came to New York, and it was last March. And he only had two shows, and his run has gotten extended. Isn't that fabulous? It's all because he was on my show, right, David?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was on my show. But anyway, it's I'm just thrilled that his talent was recognized and supported here, and that his run was extended and extended. So I'm just going to tell you just a tiny bit about him from what I learned last time to catch you up so we can find out what's going on since. So if you go to episode 338 on my Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn page, you can listen to the whole show when he was here in the studio last March. And we talked a lot about his childhood, which we're not going to do today, because do your own fucking research, okay? Listen to the show. But he's one of six. This is what we talked about. He's one of six. I believe he's from a fairly disciplined Catholic family, hardcore Catholic family. David's gay. He's gay. So I think that it sounded like his family was, it was that complicated, although it's complicated, but it sounds like he had support from his family, and they all sound so fucking well adjusted. It's kind of annoying to me, personally, but that doesn't matter to you. You don't care about that. We're not talking about that. Anyway, he found his way into comedy, and he's from America. He wound up moving to London and living there for almost 23 years. And when we had this conversation in just last March, he was thinking about moving here, and I think we kind of talked him into it. And I think he's just done really, really well here. He's performing comedy all the time. He's got his cabaret show, which has done way beyond what anybody who thought it was just going to be a brief run would have expected. He moved a lot as a kid, which I think makes him very flexible. I think that's good training. I think digging up your kids and making a move every year or two is healthy for them. But his dad was a charismatic salesperson, and he also talked about how this was funny. He just was like surprised how weed oriented New York City is when he moved here or when he came here. So I think we got him to stay. That's what we'll find that out. So anyway, check out episode 338. You can find out about his background. His comedy thing here has been working out really well. I think he's planning on staying, which he didn't know back in March. So let's catch up and see how things are going. So, David, was that kind of a reasonable summary or
what?
Wow,
I think you've covered a lot of ground there. Yeah.
I don't know what else we're
going to talk about. You've sort of covered it all.
Well, I'm so, really, I mean, you know, you're really, as you know, I believe in your work, and I think that you're a real quality comedian and stuff like that, and a quality writer, and your process, which we talked about before, is very disciplined and all that stuff. So I am so thrilled that New York has found that you guys have clicked, you in New York City. Can we say that now?
Yeah, you know, it's still early days. I mean, I've been, like you say, I've been here since February, initially just to sort of check it out and see how it felt after being in London for so long. But I pretty quickly felt embraced here.
Oh, good.
Both by my friends and contacts that I had here, but also by the comedy circuit. And you know, I'm still a new face on the comedy circuit. It takes a long time to really embed yourself in any scene, particularly in New York City, which is such a massive comedy scene.
Oh my God, yes.
And very competitive. But I'm, you know, I'm working away. I'm making mm-hmm. progress. It's mm-hmm. steady progress. I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. I'm out at the clubs, getting better. You know, over time, you want to play bigger clubs or what they call bigger rooms or more established rooms.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm making my way up the ladder. You know, it takes time, but I feel good of the progress I've made in the short time I've been here. But of course, I've been doing comedy for a long time in the UK. So I came in already with you know, a skill level.
Definitely. You know, to sort of a move. Very high level of skill, I think.
Thank you. And then on top of that, I do my comedy in a sort of cabaret style as well in the cabaret world. And I've found a home at Pangea in the East Village, and they've been extremely supportive of me. So initially, as you say, I was booked for 2 shows in April. And on the success of those shows, they booked me for 2 in June and 2 in July. Those went well. They booked me for 2 in September, 2 in October. Those went well. And so now we've got 2 more in November. And that's been such a rewarding journey. You know, I'm so grateful for Pangea, and they've been super supportive in helping to promote the show. The artist Penny Arcade, who
yes.
you know, and I'm sure you're
listening. She's been on
this
show.
Yeah, yeah, the sort of downtown performance art fixture for decades.
Oh, yeah.
A real pioneer. She's been a real supporter and let her audience know about me, and they've come out. I have a producer who's helped me promote the show by the name of Peter Michael Marino. He's a well-established performer, writer, producer in New York, and he has helped to draw an audience based on his contacts. He's been incredibly supportive. So I've had a lot of great people pitch in to help make this. And you've been supportive, you know, getting
me
on your show early.
I know. I'm happy to have quality comedy here. Are you kidding?
So I'm just thrilled that it's gone as well as it has. And I'm just being open to what's coming down the pike. You know, things invariably go up and down, and I'm open to that, you know? So, but New York so far has been a good,
I'm so pleased.
When you were on in
March, I was really thrilled to have you, and I'm so happy that the city has made a place, you know, that you're still here. So I wanted to ask you, like, when you first came here, so between February, March, and now, like, what were your expectations, and what is the reality? Like, what is actually happening? What did you expect to happen, and what's actually happening?
Well, you know, in London, like I said, I'd been doing comedy for a long time, so I worked a lot, and I could work a lot easily, because I had a lot of contacts. Obviously, I had an agent, and I was able to, you know, be on stage 4-5 nights a week pretty easily. Of course, New York, I didn't have all those contacts, so I knew it was going to be a struggle to sort of build that level of work and contacts. But it has been, you know, there are a few places that have really embraced me, and I go back to them again and again. But I'm not yet at the stage where I want to be, where I can be out 4 or 5 nights, well, 5 nights a week, gigging all over town, Brooklyn, Manhattan, sometimes 2 and 3 gigs a night. That's what I'm used to. So that, I knew it was going to be take a while to get there, and it is. It's taking a while. So that expectation, I think, is what I expected. But that's not easy for me, you know, because I want to be on stage. I want to be working all the time. The big thing about New York that anyone will tell you, and you don't have to be a new arrival to New York to see it, but is the cost. I mean, it impacts everything. And I never thought I would find somewhere more expensive than London. And
oh, really?
I moved to New York.
Bargain city.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No, I was in, like, as you know, I was in London not less than a year ago, and it's a bargain city. No, New York is crazy.
New York's crazy. But this is all new. You know, I mean, for decades, the Brits used to come, not for decades, but for a decade, the Brits would come to New York and buy all their clothes, buy everything, because it was so, because the pound was so much stronger.
Yeah.
The dollar was weaker, and they could, you know,
buy stuff.
No, those days are over.
No,
it is really expensive. So that, you know, you can't you can't separate that from any ambition you have in your life, whether it's around your housing, around your career, around your social life. It really, really is the primary experience of being in New York is facing this incredible cost of everything.
I know. Especially housing, particularly. Yeah. Right? Housing is crazy.
Obviously, people who've been here a long time, they have their housing secure. Maybe they have rent control, or they own something, or, mm-hmm. or whatever. But for those of us who are new or have some sort of more precarious housing life, it really is a major concern.
You know, from my experience, I do think that is part of the thing about moving here is like there's somehow a career of managing your housing too, because I think when people are new here, it is daunting.
Yes.
And I think as you stay here, I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think after you stay here, the longer you stay here, the easier it becomes, because the more familiar you have to really, it's like you learn the landscape. So I think I think some of that trepidation is just that you haven't been here. You've been here under 5 years.
Exactly. And, you know, this was my experience in London when I went to London in 2000.
Yeah.
And what do you find that everyone's place, everything that people finally secure? Oh, I knew a friend who was moving out of this rent control place. Oh, a contact gave me something. I got in early. I was able to get this thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't because they found it online like everyone else. No, it's who you know. It's contacts. It's learning the system, as you say, learning how to make it work for you. And that takes time.
Yeah, it just takes time.
Yeah.
Right. And you also, you're meeting a lot of new people. And the more people you meet, you know, it'll work out. We have faith in that here. We have faith that it'll work out.
It's just, you know, I just have to hang on through those early years.
It's
stressful. It's stressful.
That's why everybody here is so freaked out and yelling and screaming all the time.
Yeah.
So expectations and how it's worked out. So what is your experience? I mean, you didn't expect to have your show extended over and over.
No, no, but it is what I have always dreamed of, you know, to have this kind of almost a residency, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, no, I didn't expect it,
mm-hmm.
but I've been thrilled that it's come my way, you know, I've been hustling.
I know. I mean, I believe it.
Yeah, New York has really inspired that in me. I think maybe one of the things that happened in London is I got a little bit complacent.
Mm.
And I knew where I could gig. I didn't push myself to, in my career, I was sort of settling into, a routine. A routine. And there's a higher ceiling for me.
Yes.
But I need to push myself. And New York, you know, you're going to have to push yourself in New York. There's just no way about it. If you want something, you've got to go for it.
Mm.
So I'm excited to be in that mindset right now.
Oh, good.
In my life.
So please.
And I knew it was going to be hard, and it is hard, but I'm still at it, and I'm still hungry, and I'm still... You know, out there hustling like everyone else.
So can we say, do you think it's worked out better than you expected? Or because when you were here, when you were here in March, you were ambivalent about staying.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of that had to do with a relationship that was sort of on the wane and stuff like that. And so how do you feel? You probably have less ambivalence is probably not where you are right now. So what change is what I'm asking?
I think it took, you know, it's like getting in a hot bath. That initial moment is like, I want to get out of this bath. It's too hot. I can't stand the heat, you know? And I've just really stayed in New York and stayed in the heat and the discomfort. And, you know, what I have to do now is a lot of contacting comedy clubs, hey, can I get, you know, I'm not used to that because I did that early in my career in London and I got past that. I didn't have to be that person who is like, hey, by the way, you don't know me. Here's, you know, now I have to go back to those old behavior, mm-hmm. you know, just mm-hmm. like a new comic. And it's uncomfortable, but I have to do it. And I'm doing it. And I'm getting more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And New York, I'm getting more comfortable with New York as well. And I'm a little bit letting go of London in the way I didn't think I was going to be able to.
Oh, wow.
So, so I guess I didn't expect to be this committed this far into it. You know, I thought maybe I would do it for 3 months, 4 months. Now we're on to February to November. You know, I'm still here and I have no plans to leave.
Yeah. It's like much closer to a year.
Yeah.
So, would you say that it's exceeded your experience has exceeded expectations?
Yeah, I think it has.
That's great. You must feel really happy.
Yeah, it feels good. You know, I'm a...
And stressed.
I'm a apocalypsist, so I'm always on the lookout for the apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
So I need to... it's good to be with you because it reminds me that I need to acknowledge it's going well. And, of course, it can always go better, but it's going great. And I need to embrace that and feel good about that.
I'm thrilled that New York stole you away.
Yeah.
So, what about you must be meeting a lot of, are you making new friends and stuff like that? You must be settling in. So what things are like kind of, what's changed, what's going on? Like what's changed?
Yeah.
What's happened?
I mean, I was great. I was lucky in that I had a group of friends, you know, obviously I'm American, but I left the US in 2000. But I left behind a really close group of friends. We were all in San Francisco in the 90s, and most of them moved to New York.
Oh.
I went to London. They came to New York. So when I came to New York, they were all still here.
Oh, great.
So I came into a network of friends, and, you know, they'd been to London over the years. I'd been back mm-hmm. to New York over the years mm-hmm. to visit. And that's so I'm grateful for that, and they've been extraordinarily helpful and generous with me or to me. But I didn't really know people in the comedy world. So building contacts and friendships in that world has been a little slower going, but I have built a few really solid friendships, and I'm grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's partially about contacts and, hey, where should I gig and introduce me to people. But also it's just about having a friend in the business who knows what you're going through.
Right.
That was a really shitty gig last night, or it was terrible, or I flopped, or I bombed, or I did great, you know, and you could share that with them as well, and they can share that with me, and that kind of camaraderie,
tribe
is so important, I think, for any creative person.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, to mm-hmm. have someone who's going through the same creative struggles, the same career struggles, to have someone on your team, and you're on their mm-hmm. team. You're going mm-hmm. through it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I built a bit of that as well. And I'm really happy that
that's great.
Gone as well as it
yeah.
has.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're starting to really find your place.
Yeah.
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 And how do you think, I'm going to say, you know, moving to New York or being in New York, but it's more than that. It's moving to New York, but it's also like a sea change in your life. So how has that affected, moving anywhere, how has that affected your work, do you think, your thinking in your work?
It's made me more my comedy is a little bit more about those kinds of issues, bigger, like, instead of the minutiae of pop culture or politics, that, you know, whatever's happening with Trump that day, or, you know, it's easy to get into that stuff, and some sure. of that stuff is really fun. But I think I'm talking more about life stages and life decisions more in my comedy than I was before. Because I've made a big life change, a big pivot. A new chapter, started a new chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reminded me that those things come at you know, all different times of life. You know, I'm not 25 or 35 or even 45, you mm-hmm. know, and to make a big change at 55 is maybe huge. A little bit unexpected.
Huge.
Yeah.
And brave, guys. Don't get complacent.
Yes. Yes.
Do not get are you happy you did it?
I'm very happy.
Are you like, yeah. oh my yeah. God, yeah. I got out of my whatever? I'm yeah. in a, like a...
And you know, there was really great stuff about the last chapter.
I know.
But
I'm sure.
It was time for me to change. And I think I was never going to... I was never going to accomplish certain things in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think there's a possibility that I may accomplish those things. I may get those
things. Wow. So you have, you know, guys, let me tell you something. Like the thing about David, I'm going to say this about you, is
right.
that one of the things that I have, that I'm projecting on you and that I admire about you is that I think you're like a really organized person. And I think your brain is sort of like, you seem like somebody who's got like a plan, who presents themselves professionally. The photographs always look good. He's got the shit down, man. He's got the craftsmanship down. And that's something that I really admire. And I think that's something that is kind of an extra, you know, an extra force that you have in your pocket, you know?
Mm.
And you have integrity for the work, so you're not going to get complacent.
Yeah, well, I try not to. You know what it's like, Lisa. We all, you know, find ourselves sometimes, you know, lazy or complacent or disorganized or not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself in those places too, but the thing is, I know when I'm there, and I don't feel, I know I've let myself down when I'm in those places. I'm not prepared to accept that from myself.
You have discipline. This is what I'm trying to tell.
Well, it's not that I have discipline, it's that I'm super self-judgmental.
Oh, okay. However, you get it done.
So it gets it done, you know. But it's the wagging of the finger.
Yeah,
you know
you're
what
hard
I mean?
On yourself.
I guess I'm sort of hard on myself.
Mm-hmm.
But listen,
gets a job done.
It delivers.
Yeah,
it delivers.
Yeah.
I'll batter my uh-huh. internal self as whatever I need to get it done.
So as So this is going to be a little bit like, okay, so this is a little bit about me too, I think, but as a childless woman older than you, I think I'm just going to say as a gay man, I'm relating as a childless woman seeing you as a gay man, I'm going to say that you have the flexibility in your life to keep growing where if you'd had, in my impression, if you'd had children, you wouldn't have had these options. Like I see you as a creative person who has a trajectory always. And I just think, do you think, like, what about you gay people? Don't you think it's easier that way? Or what do you think about it? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I would say two things. One, I think that, you know, I have siblings that have kids, and I wouldn't suggest that they've stopped growing.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
They grow in a different way.
You're right about that.
And that's a way that I will never grow because I don't have kids.
You're right about that.
So that's the first thing. Secondly, I think that it's not that so much that I, you know, I also know plenty of gay men who are stuck. You know, they don't have kids, but they're stuck
in something. Yeah, right. You're right about that.
And I think it's less about being gay and even maybe less about being a single childless woman, but I think it's more about being an artist or a creative person. And I think that I learned early on from some mentors and teachers that being a creative person, being an artist, and I do think of myself as an artist. I know that sounds kind of
pretentious. Yeah.
And you know, and I think comics are artists, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think our being an artist means constantly, constantly pushing, changing, evolving, growing your work.
Mm-hmm.
And that then becomes an approach to your life as well.
Right.
So I get really uncomfortable when I'm not reaching.
Right.
When I'm not trying something new, pushing myself creatively. And that also happens in my life when I don't, when I settle into something for too long, I begin to really get uncomfortable and I need to be pushing. I need to be pushing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less, like I say, it's less about being gay and it's more about being an artist, I think.
Yeah. And also, I mean, a lot of gay people certainly are parents. So that's,
oh, yes,
especially
absolutely.
Nowadays. So,
absolutely.
I'm
an old school gay. I'm what they call an LGBT OG. You know what I mean? I'm the old style. So I'm the gay man who, you know, never has kids is kind of from the 90s, really.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And that era of gay men, I think we are our own thing. We really had the fear of God put in us with AIDS and seeing the generation just above us really get decimated. Mm-hmm. Didn't have mentors really because that generation got wiped out. And, you know, we're fucked up in our own way. But I think a lot of us are, you know, like me, you know, we're constantly moving. We're constantly trying to kind of push ahead. A lot of us now have kids and have gone that route, but I think I relate to the generation before me almost in a way that I don't relate as well to the generations after. I do, of course, but
yeah, no, you know, I know what you're saying, especially about when it comes to family, because it's so common now for all sorts of people to have families, which is a great thing, thank God.
Sure.
I think that was probably a little bit of projection from me, because I wind up, I see a lot of women who, become mothers who are frustrated by it. I think there's a lot of creative women. I see a lot of creative women that have kids, and, I think it's, so do you think there's a conflict between being a parent and being a creative person?
I think being a parent is so life-swallowing that there's almost a conflict between parenting and, you know, it's easy to get swallowed up by that. And anything, any of your interests, whether it's creativity or athletics or whatever, can go by the wayside. And I think there are a lot of parents that are frustrated with that. I think you really have to come to terms with how it changes your life. You know, I think a lot of people don't aren't prepared for that.
Yeah. And I guess I see more frustrated creative women because I am a woman. Women generally, especially hetero women, you know, bear the brunt of parenting, right? And I do think that babies, very young children, do need their mothers. I don't think that's sexist. I think that's nature. Sorry, guys. So I think there's, you know, I think a lot of it is women thinking that they're going to be, I don't think a lot of women are prepared for, I just think it's hard. I think society's fucked up.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard. And I think women get a lot of childcare dumped on them and not appreciated, because the kids aren't supposed to appreciate it. They're the kids.
No.
And then no one else, you know, maybe the husbands aren't going to appreciate it because they're not there. And they're probably, you know, a lot of them feel like they're doing all the other stuff.
Yeah.
So,
I have great admiration for any mother out there, because it's such a big job and such an important job.
Yeah.
And as you say, I think it's underrated and undervalued. And, you know, I think a lot of people go a little bit crazy because it's hard and they're isolated.
Yes, they're very isolated.
You know, and it's, I think it's...
And it's thankless.
And it's thankless.
Yeah. It's thankless.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of single mothers. And I think single mothers, the term is an oxymoron because there are no single mothers unless you have a, turkey baster or something. But anyway, yeah, sexism is rampant. What have you noticed that's like the biggest, what are some of the bigger differences, particularly in comedy or anything between New York and
I'll say this,
London?
I think New York comedy is super diverse.
Oh, good.
Which is great. London and the UK is diverse, but not as diverse as New York. But the UK is more international.
Ah, interesting.
Than the US, right? So I'll be on a bill in London and there'll be someone from France, someone from Eastern Europe, someone from India, someone from Africa, someone from China. That's all very, very standard.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's people are all different races, but all Americans.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? You don't
yes.
get as many. And maybe because immigration is somehow more difficult or something. I don't know what that's about.
Also, we're not living in, a different continent. It's one continent.
Exactly. And the UK is a sort of a tiny island next to a massive continent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
even though Brexit has inhibited immigration, and it has, there's still lots of Europeans around. So either they got in before Brexit or something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it's interesting that way. So it's quite international, like I said, although it can be oftentimes very white. Not always. London's very diverse. But that's one thing that's different.
Mm-hmm.
I would say also the UK has more of a tradition of character comedy.
Oh. Mm.
So sometimes you'll be on the bill and the next person will be someone dressed up as some Victorian character or some, you're like, okay, here we go, So that's something that's in the culture much more. And there's some big comics like on the national scene who are characters.
Yeah. Or like, Dame Edna's the classic of
like
that.
Like Dame Edna.
Who's
exactly.
a genius. You've
exactly.
seen Dame. Did you ever meet Dame Edna? Did
oh God,
you ever?
No, but I've saw her multiple times.
Yeah.
So brilliant.
But
yeah, people like that, like Dame Edna or Ali G.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
So those people pop up, and then there's things like magicians, ventriloquists.
Oh, on the same bill?
On the same bill, yeah.
Oh.
So you'll get that kind of thing, or people who do impersonations, impressions. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, it's got a more varied flavor.
Mm-hmm.
New York is really good at that kind of like one person with a mic telling jokes. It's the best place in the world for that.
Mm-hmm.
And even in London, they don't hit the quality and craft that you get see of that in New York. But what you don't see then is the wide variety of comics and styles that you see in London.
Huh, that's interesting. So when you say that, do you mean like at the clubs? Because I like very diverse comedy, and I don't necessarily like my thing is I love comedy, but not necessarily club comedy.
Right.
So I find a huge amount of diversity in the other comedy.
Sort of the alt world.
You call it alt. Call it alt.
Yeah.
Alt comedy. But so when you talk about clubs and stuff, because that's where you're making your living, they pay, unlike the alt places.
Right.
Is
right.
that what you're talking about? It's more similar?
I think definitely... definitely in the clubs and even the alt scene that I've seen here in New York, and I haven't been here that long, but like Brooklyn, essentially Queens, that sort of thing. The styles, the alt style feels closer to the club world than the alt styles in the UK. So some of the alt styles in the UK are really like anti-comedy. You know, people who are up there specifically to not be funny. I mean, really weird stuff.
Like more like Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman, more sort of even performance art, dance. I mean, you can go on some bills and they're just like, and I do like something that's a little bit more narrative in cabaret than most club comics. But I've been on many bills in the UK where I'm the most conventional thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, because some of the stuff that comes out, you're like, where am I? What is going on? You know, and there's room for it. Like the audience isn't.
They take that in. They take that in.
It doesn't always work, but it's not atypical. Whereas here, I think if someone like that shows up, it's like really different.
Yeah, or we would, you know, because I definitely do open mics enough to have a sense of that, and that wouldn't. I mean, there is some room to move in being more, say, abstract, but it's all basically stand up.
Yes, exactly. I think that where it gets alt here is in the topics or the delivery as opposed to the full package, which you know, someone comes dressed as a ghost, you know, and you're like, okay, here we go. This is happening now.
What about the sense of humor in general? Like, do we laugh at the same things, or like, have you gotten a similar reaction from New York?
It's funny because I think in some ways it's exactly the same, and then in some ways it's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Of course, the Brits are famous for a particular irony,
mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of irony in New York as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think mm-hmm. there's a misperception that Americans don't have irony. They say that a lot in the UK, and I think you're crazy. You know, that's mm-hmm. totally crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I describe it if you know The Office and you think of the UK Office versus the US Office.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah, I guess so.
So they both work.
Yeah.
They're very similar in many ways, but they're also a different flavor.
Yeah.
The UK can be a little bit more almost depressing, you know. They really like to wallow in the pessimism of life.
Mm.
And the U.S. likes, in the end, as dark as it gets, it likes to show a little bit of hope at the end. You know, there's hope.
That's nice to hear. We're a little more positive.
And we're a little bit more hopeful, I think, and look on the bright side, whereas the Brits don't trust the bright side.
Ah.
They really don't trust the bright side.
Ah.
And they don't like the bright side. Mm-hmm. And they so as an American in the U.K., you're often... that's something that comes up a lot when they, you know, respond to you. Why are you so positive? Or they don't, you know, they don't really go there. So, even the dark stuff in the U.S., I would say, usually has a hopeful message at the end.
Well, I wouldn't have expected to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. You should hear how dark it gets in the U.K.
Yeah.
Get really, really depressing.
Because of the weather.
I think because of the weather. And I think because, you know, we're just so much bigger, right? So
the
big sky and open space. And there's just hope in the U.S. just geographically that they just don't have it.
Yeah.
Because they're just all crowded into this sweaty island, you know?
Yeah. And we see people like, you know, become all sorts of people. You can make it here.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of there are a lot of opportunities in America.
Yeah.
You know, for all sorts of people.
That's right.
Which, you know. So I was gonna say, how do you feel about like the, is it like a lot more competitive here or I would imagine New York has probably got it. Do you think New York
is
the most competitive market for comedy? Or?
Yeah, it's pretty competitive. It is really competitive. I mean, it's competitive in London too, but New York, the rewards are so much greater.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you make it in New York, you've got so much more opportunity than if you make it in London.
Yeah, this is true.
And, you know, it can be good if you make it in London. It could be really good. But if you make it in New York, you know, now you've got Hollywood, you've got TV, you've got film, you've got a much bigger world to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so lots of British comics, if they could, would come to the U.S.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
They don't have
the passports.
Immigration, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and there are British comics here. You know, of course, there are. And either they married an American or they found some way. And, you know, they do well here,
mm-hmm.
but, and they've got something distinctive, which is important.
Yeah, it's really hard to stand out, isn't it?
It's very hard to stand out. So an accent or being from a different country really helps. But yeah, it's competitive. It's definitely competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So which clubs have you been, or what kind of clubs have you been working at, or what are your clubs?
Well, I've sort of been all over the place. So this weekend, Saturday and Sunday night, I'm at the Grizzly Pear on
Google.
Next Wednesday, I'm at Greenwich Village Comedy Club, just a few doors down, also on McDougal. This past weekend, I was at the Grizzly Pear in Midtown.
Oh.
I've done the Broadway Comedy Club a few times.
Yeah.
West Side Comedy Club. Here in Brooklyn, I opened for someone in Union Hall.
Oh, nice. That place.
Yeah, it's great. I did QED recently.
Oh, yeah. Cambrian.
I'm sort of just...
So you've just been... You've gotten this... You've gotten...
I'm trying to get out
whole,
there.
You've got,
trying to...
So yeah. you've gotten all the boroughs.
I'm trying to hit as many as I can. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's still so many. I mean, that's the great thing about New York. There's so much comedy. I thought there was a lot in London, but New York has got it beat.
It's over.
So
it can be. It can be
a little
be
overwhelming.
Yeah.
But it means a lot. You know, it just means there's a lot of places you can try and gig
and develop.
Ultimately get up.
Well, you know. Wow. So what about your life back in London? Mm. You must have people people there who are going David, where did you go?
Where are you coming back?
How's that going? What's your feelings about that?
I had to, for a long time, I had my UK number here in the US for about
mm-hmm.
5
mm-hmm.
months.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally switched over to a US number because friends were like, would you just switch over?
Because they have to call you.
Yeah, this is getting a pain, becoming a pain. They don't want to use WhatsApp. You know,
right. No.
Yeah, I use WhatsApp all the time in the UK, but here people were like, I'm not going to use WhatsApp, and I don't want to. It costs me money to text you and all this stuff. So finally, I did it, and in order to do that, I have the same phone. Somehow, I had to let go of my UK number, or it doesn't come through as much. So that was a real step for me, you know. And a lot of my friends now have to reach out to me on Instagram and that sort of thing. I'm going to go back, I think, maybe around Christmas time
to see people and visit.
Yeah.
So what are you missing of London?
People.
Your friends.
My friends, yeah. I had a great routine. You know, I had my cafe that I liked. I had my gym that I liked. I had my restaurant that I liked. I had all those things, you know, that I liked in my life. And the thing that I miss that we just don't really have here is pubs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are plenty of pubs, but they're somehow...
What's different? I know exactly what you mean, but I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it. Can you explain
it? Well, the difference is the pubs in the UK are full of Brits, and the pubs in the US are full of Americans.
And what does that mean?
It means they have, from an early age growing up...
Right.
Their
it's the
family
living room.
Goes, it's their living room. They know the pub. Here, maybe you go with friends once a month or something. It's not part of your life in the same way, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so they treat it differently. It has a different, you have a different vibe.
It's an event.
Yeah, it has a different vibe. And so I miss that, but I'm drinking a lot less, which is a good thing. Good for me. Because it's a real drinking culture in the UK.
Oh, yes.
And I like it, but it can, you know, at a certain point, you've got to think, is this healthy?
Yeah, no, drinking less is
good. At a certain age.
You can't.
I just can't recover
the same
way.
You can't advocate for drinking more in good
But
conscience.
I do miss the pub, and
I can see that.
It's really great, particularly in the run-up to Christmas. Pubs are great. You know, they're cozy and warm, and sometimes there's a fire, and... You know, they've got mulled wine and that kind of thing. And, you know, you could spend all day there.
Yeah, it's like a living room. I like that about London pubs, too, because I feel like if I go to a pub in London and I start a conversation with somebody, it's more of like a living room family conversation. Yeah. Whereas if I start a conversation in New York, it's there's got to be like some sexual goal or something.
Oh, really?
Well, not that I necessarily inspire that, or I'm certainly not looking for that.
It's like an undercurrent.
Yeah, maybe it's being female. Maybe it's just that I'm used to being female. That like if you talk to a guy in a bar, I remember in my 30s, like going to a bar and just being really wanting to have a conversation. I'd gotten off of work and I just wanted to be distracted and talk to somebody. I lived alone, and sending a man for no reason a drink. I had the bartender send him a drink, and the guy still wouldn't have a conversation with me.
How strange.
Not
and he was
really.
Also alone?
Yeah, I was alone.
How weird.
I know. And I love talking to strangers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really kind of my favorite thing because you don't have to have a relationship with them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You don't have to see them again. And there's no like, when are we getting together?
No, exactly.
So I'm somebody who loves a talk with a stranger, but I find it really hard to get away. I find there's sexuality. Is it just because I'm in Bushwick? But I feel like sexuality is, you know, or such an important part of going to a bar here or something like, or an over, like a...
I mean, you could still find it, of course, in London. You know, you can find yourself
you
in that
situation.
You can
go to pick a bar anywhere, but I'm saying, like, to go out
but there's
for a
more,
drink.
There's a real culture of small talk.
There. Yeah.
And a lot of people really hate it. I like it. I like small talk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think you actually, some people say, well, you're not really communicating anything. But actually, I think you're communicating a lot with small talk. Talk about the weather. Talk about the public transport, talk about, you know, maybe a bit of football or whatever, just whatever's in the culture. No one really ruffles any feathers, but somehow you acknowledge one another and you share, laugh. And it can be, I think it can be really reassuring. And I like a bit of small talk.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in the UK, a lot of small talk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably my problem because I usually approach people with some like really heavy thought that I had.
I think that's a more American style.
We're used to that. I want to connect so desperately.
Yes. Yes.
I love intimacy that has, I like to be really, this is why I like doing the show because you get to be really intimate, but you never have to deal with the people again.
Perfect. Casual intimacy.
Yeah.
A little bit of casual intimacy.
Yeah. Except on an emotional level.
Yes.
So I'm so excited that things are working out for you. And it's not just because I'm excited for you, but I'm also excited because I do think that your work is a really top quality. I think your process and the way your work is really quality work. And I'm glad that it's been embraced well enough here to encourage you to stay. I really am. And I mean that. Because I do love comedy and there's a really, you know, quality comedy is something that is not always that easy to find. So what do you like? Do you want to talk about like, we only have 5 minutes. So do you want to talk about like what you're sort of thinking about your plans or are you, or do you not want to, do you want to talk about how you don't want to think about your plans?
Well, no, like I said, I've got these two shows in November at Pangea tomorrow night on the 3rd and then on the 18th. And those will be the last times I do this show, Glamour and Despair in 2023. That's the name of the show, Glamour and Despair.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of two sides of the same coin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'll be gigging around at clubs between now and the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it looks like I'm going to be taking the show back to London in March for a few shows in March.
Mm-hmm.
And between December and March, I'm hopeful that I can do the show at a few venues on the West Coast.
Oh.
I'm trying to organize that now.
Nice. That's where your family is, right?
I've got family out there and friends out there. So I can, so that's the plan. And then I expect I'll be back at Pangea in the springtime, either with a new show or with a kind of revamped version of this, you know, mm-hmm. this Glamour Despair mm-hmm. 2.0 mm-hmm. or something.
Oh.
But mm-hmm. That's, I'm going to be out there and I'm going to be gigging mm-hmm. and You know,
so what's the growth experience? We've got 5 minutes, but can you wrap up in a minute, a couple minutes, what your growth experience has been like in the past 8 months? What do you think as a person,
wow,
as a human?
Yeah, I think I've really challenged myself to shake off some old patterns, particularly in the relationship I was in for 10 years, and break out of a kind of stagnant place.
Mm-hmm.
And really put myself in an uncomfortable place in order to get to progress.
Mm-hmm.
To
creatively.
Creatively, emotionally,
mm-hmm.
and personally, you know.
Mm-hmm. They're all linked.
Yeah, they're all linked. And professionally as well, mm-hmm. career-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was never going to happen in that where I was in a comfortable but uncomfortable relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
I totally
I had grown comfortable mm-hmm. with discomfort,
mm-hmm.
and it was stifling me,
mm-hmm.
and it was easy, and I stayed in it too long, and it was easy to stay in. I really had to push myself to get out of
mm-hmm.
it, and it was better for him, it was better for me,
mm-hmm.
but it's been a few months of discomfort, and I'm still in a stable kind of housing situation. I mean, I'm stable for the mm-hmm. moment, but it's not going to last. Mm-hmm. So I've got to, you know,
and
income wise and all sorts of things. But I'm grateful I did it because I can see the light at the end of this journey, whereas before I couldn't see any.
Right. So you kind of open up. This is so great. This is like a real inspiring talk, guys. Like the thing is, like I'm a lot older than you, but you're in your mid-50s, and you made a huge change, which a lot of people would not do.
Yeah.
And you're getting really, really rewarded for it, right?
Yeah, thank you. It's been good.
Yeah. It's been good. So guys, listen, you should learn from this, all right? Listen to this guy. He made this huge change. He didn't know what was going to happen. You know, and like, well, look where we are now.
And also, this is a quick one. Rely on the people who love you. Rely on your friends. Ask for help.
Oh, ask good. For help. You ask for
help. Yeah, yeah. And friends have been so generous. And they are thrilled. You know, they saw me in this relationship for 10 years. They are thrilled that I've found the courage to break out, to pursue my emotional, professional, personal growth. And they want me to succeed. So they want to help however they can. And your friends want to help you too. They love you, you know, your family, your friends, contacts, people professionally. They want you to thrive. So it's hard to ask for help, but do. And the rewards come. You'd be amazed.
And they feel good. It helps them in return. You're actually helping them in return.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we have 45 seconds. So can you just get, you know, do all the, tell us where you're going to be.
Okay,
your
so
website,
the show again
stuff.
Is called Glamour and Despair. It's at Pangea in the East Village on 2nd Avenue. You can look online, pangeanyc.com. The shows are tomorrow night at 9:30 and then November 18th, that's a Saturday, also at 9:30. You can follow me at David Mills, DEPT, like David Mills Department, on Instagram and Twitter. And I'm constantly posting everything there. And then also my website is itsdavidmills.com. And you can see videos and reviews and all sorts of things there as well.
And a big article in the Daily Beast.
And a nice article in the Daily Beast.
So that was really good. We have 8 seconds left. So I'm going to say thanks a lot for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free.